This is the ColoradoHockey.com podcast. So if you're listening to this in between episode and you haven't heard the previous one, which is part one with Chris Wassell, you should definitely go and have a listen to that because it sets the table, it sets the mood, and it kind of gives you an idea how we get into the second part of things, which is deeper, darker at times, and also more interesting because it's not just about the hockey all the time. It's also about some of the stories of players that you've heard of, people that you know, and the experiences of Chris Wassell. So definitely go back and have a listen to that if you haven't already. And otherwise, check this out. This is part two. Oh, and of course, we're just jumping right in because that's what we do. But to bring you up to speed a little bit, the last thing that we were talking about is the future of Coach Wall and then also a franchise player with the Avalanche. So the idea being that there can only really be one franchise player. Maybe there could be two if there was a forward and a defenseman or a forward and a goalie. But when it comes to forwards, we think that there can only really be one franchise player. Is that Dutchie? Is that Mac? We don't know, but that's where we left off and that's where we're leaving you. So without further ado, here is Chris Wassell and the other half of our conversation. Oh, and I should apologize now for the crappy audio quality. I'm aware it's sometimes it's the best you can do, and this story is good enough to put up with it. You'll hear me jump in here and there with some clarification on things, but otherwise, it's good to go. There's gold in this. You're going to love it. Okay, here we go.
In the 2013 draft, and there'll be arguments about this from now until, God, I'm 50, which, damn it, that's 10 years. Crap. Always start thinking about that, you know, when you hit middle age. It's like, damn, I was just so much younger then. But yeah, the first thing McKinnon said to me, it's like, yeah, I'm ready to be number one pick. No question about it. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to get in there, play. I may have a little bit of a struggle at first. And he was right too. That's the funny part.
Yeah.
You know, first, I'd say up till about December 1st. And I can remember this well. You know, he even said to us, we had a quick interview with him on my show a couple of years ago. And he said, yeah, you know, I'm shooting at 6%. This really sucks. I mean, you know, it was a little bit out of character for him, but at the same time, it really isn't. You know, he is rather candid unexpectedly at times. And, you know, he said to me, he's like, I think I'm going to pick this up. And he was right. He had like 22 goals after, you know, December 1st. And, you know, did his shot percentage creep up all that much? Yeah, it got up to like about 13%, but it wasn't so dramatically high that you said, well, why can't he do this every season? And then last year, obviously, kind of did it again, sort of, but just not as for as long of a stretch. And this year, yeah, everybody in Colorado got off to a bad start. Then there's the Varlamov injury. Redobera catches a little bit of fire, and McKinnon starts to produce with Duchesne, which I kept thinking in my head, why aren't these two guys playing together all the time? Somebody listen, finally. Put these guys in as often as I can. Obviously, it didn't work on Tuesday night, but for the overall results, you look and you go, okay, it is obvious that McKinnon needs a guy like Duchesne and vice versa. It tends to work.
It seems like a no-brainer. And I was like you, I was going back. I was like, why hasn't this happened yet? Or has it? And I just don't remember. Because it seems like it's fireworks right away. I mean, these guys can keep up with each other, not just with the feet either, with their hockey minds and the way that they're thinking. And, you know, McKinnon has, I used to always tell people he's a tough puppy, but I think he's truly just a mean dog at this point. He's got a certain fire about him that is beyond skills. I mean, he's ready to test his luck dropping gloves with people at this point. And he's not the player I thought he would be, but in kind of a good way. I thought he'd be a skill player that was up and down, and he'll shoot from anywhere on the ice. He doesn't really care if he's, you know, in the house or in the slot or anything like that. He'll shoot from the corner every time. And I don't know, he is going to be good. I wasn't so sure when we first got him, but I'm pretty convinced now that he's going to be worth keeping.
One of the things that we were able to notice covering the one-day 2013 extravaganza that was the NHL draft, or the, oh, my God, how much alcohol can we consume the day before finding out that Sagan was getting traded? Imagine being a guy like Nathan McKinnon, prospective first overall pick, and the first question that you get on a Saturday afternoon scrum is, what do you think of the Tyler Sagan trade?
Yeah.
And I could see him look around and he went, you know what? That's a damn good trade for Dallas. And we all, we all just sat there and looked and said, well, yes, it is. And you know, I pulled him aside for a little bit, asked him a few questions. We got about a good three and a half minutes in, which is a lot longer than you normally get for these because he was going back on the ice to do some drills and such. And you know, and I asked him jokingly, I was like, okay, if there's one guy in the NHL you would want to fight, who would it be? And he's like, can I go old school for a second? I was like, well, how old school? And he started rattling off some names. You know, he started rattling off the classics like Basil McRae, Tony Twist, and then he went into, you know, a few other players. He's like, but there was one guy I wouldn't have wanted to mess with. And I was like, who's that? And he's like, Ray Bourque in his prime, or even really? Scott Stevens. He said Bourque was ferocious. He remembered growing up, and he's like, Bourque was just relentless. You didn't see it a lot. It was subtle with him, but you didn't want to mess with him.
I wouldn't guess that. I don't recall him fighting once in all the time that I've been watching him. Although I've heard that he's just a horse. He's as strong as can be. I mean, he looks thick and strong, and he's way stronger than he looks is what I hear.
It's the old analogy. You don't want to fight somebody you know is just crazy and relentless when pushed over the edge enough. Scott Stevens said that once to me about maybe a couple years after he retired. He's like, yeah, you didn't want to play against Ray Bourque. You just didn't.
And that means something coming from him. I mean, he is no joke himself.
Right. And that's the thing. You know, you looked at guys like Chris Degman, et cetera, who were just huge guys. You would think Nathan MacKinnon would mention somebody like, no. You know, he mentioned smaller guys like Randy McKay.
Well, he said Tony Twist, too. I wouldn't want to fight Tony Twist. I think that he should take that
Tony opposite. Twist was one of the most ferocious middleweights I've ever seen.
Yeah, he was just crazy, too.
Yeah, and crazier than Ty Domi, although Ty Domi had his moments, and plenty of them. Twist, you know, look, Twist would ride a motorcycle backwards, pop a wheelie into St. Louis Arena.
Yeah, now that guy, he lived the lifestyle that he portrayed. He was just nuts.
He did. He was just nuts. Obviously, you know, Bob Probert is no longer with us, et cetera, kind of the same way. But Twist just was on another level. Basil McRae was, too. Basil McRae was something else. But the weird thing with him was, unlike some of those others that we just mentioned, he could turn it off. That was scary.
That is scary.
I mean, like Scott Stevens, he could turn it off. Now, obviously, in Stevens' younger days, not so much. But once he became captain of the Devils, you walk in, that's Scott Stevens. Look around. Yeah. Looks so businesslike. Basil McRae was kind of the same way. Especially towards the end of his career, it's like, that Basil McRae? Yeah. 5 minutes later, he's on the ice pummeling somebody.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it's a compensation thing. Like, there are some reporters out there who happen to be very beautiful women, and at times I see them almost trying to be overly businesslike because they don't want people to give them the hot chick syndrome. I mean, you know, it's never been a problem for me, but when I've worked with, I see it. I see people treat them differently all the time, and I don't know if that's just human nature or not, but I think there's a certain compensation that happens. And, you know, there's certain players that don't. Like, Scott Parker's just Scott Parker. He doesn't worry about a suit or any of that. He went out and did his business. Right. When we had the lockout, he went and drove a tow truck because he was bored. I mean, I think that I think that within the enforcer world, that there's just a lot of guys who are really, really genuine. But then we get guys who have the skill to, like, the Scott Stevens and so on. I think that they want to make sure that people know that they're, you know, they're not just out there to be tough and be big.
And the funny thing is, like, you know, talking with MacKinnon about this, he's like, yeah, you know, there's some nights that I just want to go out and beat the crap out of somebody.
You know, I'm hearing more about MacKinnon from you than I have from all my sources. He sounds like he is actually really well put together mentally. I thought that he was a little bit younger than that. And I thought, you know, having an Iggy around was a great thing because I thought that, you know, maybe he's rubbing off on him a little bit with being able to turn it off and when he should turn it off. This seems like as good a time as any to tell you that sometimes technology just fails you. So what I was trying to say is it seems like Iggy is really rubbing off on Mac in the terms of toughness on the ice, play, and then also poise and composure. And now back to the interview with Chris Wasso.
So that, again, was one of the funniest guys you'll ever meet.
I've heard that, but yeah, I never met him. I heard that he is very genuine and funny as can be.
It was fortunate enough. He happened to be at, I can't remember the draft. It might have been the Pittsburgh draft in 2012. He just happened to just drop in.
Just showed up.
Yeah, he showed up. Mario was there, et cetera, and he just happened to show up for a charity event. He's like, hey, you know, can I take a few minutes of your time? He's like, shoot, how about having a couple drinks? You know, and he had a couple friends there, a couple former players, and it's like, you're sitting there drinking beers with, Jerome McGinley, Curtis Joseph, Chris Osgood, and a few other TV guys, and it's like, next thing you know, it's not just this table, but it's like a scrum of tables.
That's pretty cool.
Everybody's just, passing drinks and downing shots and everything else. And that's kind of what it's about. To be honest, the hockey community is the closest fraternity and sorority, too, because people forget that there's so many women reporters. You now have the women's hockey leagues as well, which are much better run than I ever could have expected. And a lot of fun for the people that cover them. And I do dabble in that too occasionally, just because I like to hear the stories, and it's always fun to see what makes, a professional player tick. Cause I was once one myself. I never got to the NHL, obviously. I might have turned my ankle into some kind of food bar like mess.
I've done that on both ankles. Just rec league for me, though. Nothing too serious.
Oh no, I wrecked my one ankle so bad that basically the bottom of my, if I sit too long, say in a recliner chair, my foot starts just throbbing endlessly. So it's like, yeah, I probably did the Peyton Manning where I tore my plantar fasciitis and I, did a little bit of a number on my Achilles tendon. The doctor's like, yeah, we can't do much for that. But hey, here's this 4-inch needle we're going to jam in there. This should help numb it. Definitely. And you won't feel anything for a few days. But no, you're absolutely right. It's what people don't realize is, often covering the sport, the worst thing you can do covering it is to be pigeonholed into one discipline.
What do you mean by that?
If you're 100% of the time, after a while, it's not enough to just be a beat writer. You have to know certain basic things. You have to come across a certain way. You have to adapt in some way. I look at some of the guys that are in, I feel like the Pete Jensens of the world, the Matthew Kubetas, the Neil Parkers, the Michael Cliffords. Michael Clifford, for example, is one of the best daily fantasy hockey writers I know, along with Neil Parker, the two of them. They're not just into hockey. They're also into football and baseball as well. Neil covers actually almost every major sport. Mike covers baseball pretty much like he covers hockey. And yes, a lot of us use advanced stats. There's no question about it. But there's a lot of us also that use those advanced stats to make it easier for the average person to understand. The average person isn't going to sit there and go, well, what the heck is this IHSC/60 thing? And they'll literally say that. It's like, what is that?
I'm saying that right now. I have no idea what that is.
And basically all it is individual high danger scoring chances per 60 minutes. Say an average first line hockey player plays about 20 minutes. So if he generates a couple chances every 20 minutes, he generates 6 per 60. That tends to be pretty good, actually. The high danger areas are basically your point blank areas within 15 to 20 feet of the net, or what they call the middle of the ice, There's a few names for it. It's like the Royal Road, the oh God, there's so many vulgar ones that some hockey players use.
Oh, this is explicit. Go ahead. Give us some of those really quick. That's gold right there.
God, how to do this without sounding sexist. Right down.
I'll let you off the hook as well if you want, though. I get what you're saying. Okay.
You go right down the middle and you're in the hole. I mean.
Okay. I'm with you. Okay.
But that's the higher danger areas. Within the face-off dots and in basically, is your higher danger. If you go a little bit outside, those are your medium danger areas, and it kind of forms like a cup. And then obviously from the blue line, and maybe a little bit further in, a little bit further out are your low danger chances. Although, if you're a certain New York Ranger player, or if you're a certain Nashville player, if fire like James Neal fires 75 footers, they go in that at least half the time on certain nights, like it did the other night. So, but that would be an example of a low danger chance from the blue line. It generally should not go in unless it's, say, it's a Shea Weber 106 mile per hour laser.
That guy's amazing.
Unbelievable. I mean, and the thing that I'll say to people is this. It's not just shooting 100 miles per hour, because I had a friend of mine that shot 104 easy. It's when these players start shooting and the puck dips and dives and moves all over the place, and it's still going 105 miles per hour. If you have ever been hit in the back of the leg with no padding by a 100 mile per hour slap shot, you will immediately know the pain that comes from it, because it does really move.
So I've never been hit with one that fast, I don't think, but I right below the shorts, right above the knee pad on my thigh, I got one, and the puck hit, and then my leg had this like electrical shock sensation, and then I couldn't feel it for about an hour. Right. And you're stupid. Even if you're playing like beer league, you're like, well, I'm gonna go play anyway. It still works. I can't feel it. But I have a bruise that never went away from that. And that's where I intend to get my first tattoo as soon as I get through my midlife crisis and, get the balls to get a tattoo. But yeah, I still have a bruise, but just never went away. I have a couple of them, one on the rib cage, and it's no joke. And these guys are only getting stronger. The sticks are only getting better. I mean, being a goalie kind of sucks. You can wear some thick pads and still get hit and get hurt. You see it happen like every third game with our goalies. They take a shot you can feel it. You can hear them making that oomph sound,
Yeah. It's why I said to people, early in the season, but like, my God, scoring is down to like just under 5 goals a game between, combined between teams. We've got to enlarge nets, make goalies pads smaller. Really?
Yeah, I don't think so. I'm not a fan of any of that.
Did anybody happen to look at the fact that save percentages are up, shot selection is poor? Simple things that could be fixed, like, a guy taking a shot from 80 feet. Yeah, that's going to go in, sure.
Basketball, they'd never raise the rim, would they? I mean, you wouldn't put the hoop at 12 feet all of a sudden. I don't think that you mess with the goal at all that way. And the pads, I'm not a big fan of either. I think that, people are going to come around and they're going to crack this. They're going to start putting the puck in the net more often. And it's just, I don't know. I get they want more scoring. I'm not a big fan of how they're going about it, though.
I like this one. And Marty Berner used to say this all the time. Get rid of that damn trapezoid already. Just get rid of it. Having the trapezoid in doesn't help scoring. It actually hurts it. he's like, if my team's on the power play, I have to sit there waiting the goddamn puck to get where I can play it, and then I can flick it down the ice.
Right. I mean, he could go tape to tape from 60 feet though, easy. He's a unique goalie that way.
More than that.
Yeah. I mean,
I've seen amusingly in practice where he sat there when they actually took out the red line for being a two line pass, basically.
Right.
And, he's practicing and he's at least flicking 130, 140 foot passes.
And he was so good. He was a game changer, really. I think Wah always wanted to be that good at playing the puck, but he never was. Brodeur is just, he set the bar, I think.
Yeah. And that's where, like I say to people who, were really getting entrenched in the advanced stats then. That was one of those that wasn't really an advanced stat and never, ever should be. But it changes things. No matter how much you try to quantify that sort of skill, you can't. There's certain skills that you just can't quantify yet.
So this plays right into what one of the last two things I was going to talk to you about, although we keep going down these rabbit holes. Being so good at stats and being able to break the game down in a way that it is measurable, is this something where you could make the argument that a person who's really good at fantasy sports, fantasy hockey, would also be a really good scout for a team? I mean, they use roughly the same information you have. They go out and they watch and they use their skills over the years to kind of have a gut feeling. But I got to believe the scouts in the press box are using numbers. They're looking at the same things that you look at for fantasy hockey. Is that off the mark or am I full of shit there?
No, it's not. Actually, as a matter of fact, you'll notice it more and more. Scouts are using advanced stats a lot.
Would they be good at fantasy hockey? And if we did it the other way, would these guys be able to play fantasy hockey and do well, do you think?
I think they absolutely could. Yeah, is some of it luck? Sure. But I think if these guys played over a course of time, they would be quite good. They know the players. They know them well. A lot of these guys, a lot of the scouts, used to play like fantasy OHL. And I sat there and one year, during the lockout, I tried it. I tried the fantasy OHL. I tried fantasy AHL. There was a fantasy Memorial Cup. And I watched. And Kurt Ludecky, who is an excellent scout, he mostly does work for the Boston Bruins, but you know he does prospects from all over. Simply took a bunch of us, quote unquote, fantasy NHL hockey experts, and took us to school. It wasn't enough that he took us to school. He then, after taking us to school, he took us behind a nice little wooden shed and beat the living daylights out of us. And would have taken our lunch money and maybe even our life savings at that point. And it was definitely, it was a humble lesson learned. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You sit there and go, oh, wow, we just got killed here.
And you're better for it, though. I guarantee it.
Absolutely.
The stuff there, yeah.
You learn more by the losses and the failures you have than by the successes that you have, because you're always learning in this. The minute you stop learning, you're done.
It's not fun at that point either, right?
No, and it's not.
Arrogant if you think you know everything anyways. Those are the guys I just, you know, get out of the conversation as quick as I can. Anyone who is a master and has nothing left to learn, I'm just not interested.
Yeah, I'm still learning all sorts of things. Carolyn Wilk, who writes for Today's Slapshot, she's the one that actually had the quote about Patrick Waugh in her article on I think it was actually came out today on Wednesday morning, and she amusingly said to me, she's like, "You really like these salary bands, don't you?" And I'm like, "Yeah." I was like, because it really proves that even though Travis Zajac has like 12 points right now, he's still one overpaid piece of shit. I mean, it's just a fact of life. It's like he's just producing way above what he should. And where was this last year or the year before that? It's not the coach, really. It's not anything like that. Oh, but his faceoff numbers have dipped. Huh? I mean, and that's where... Unfortunately, advanced stats don't tell you everything. They just don't.
That's true. Well, and consistency is really hard, too. I mean, this is the best of the best of the entire world, all the best hockey players in this league, and even the best of those can't be consistent all the time. And when you are good, then it's a whole other game. People go out, and if they can't beat you with their defense, they'll headhunt you until, you know, you can't make it to the net anymore. I don't know. I don't think that the McDavid thing was so much of a headhunting thing. I think these guys just didn't have another way to play him other than just be super physical. And then at the end, it was just unlucky how they went in. But, you know, the league is better than it used to be. There was a time where if you were too good, you better watch your head or have a guy on your team that can protect you, because, you know, it trickles down that way. And I think that that's kind of the case here, too.
Yeah, the days of Dave Semenko's of the world are thankfully long gone. Am I one of those people that will say, yeah, absolutely, fighting should be gone? No.
It still has
a tiny bit of a place. It doesn't have the place that it used to. And that's
and
good.
Players can fight and also be good skill players. Again, Iggy.
Right.
I mean, he's a guy who he's not a detriment on the ice at all. He's a valued addition, but he can also get really mean and ugly and make faces and say mean things and drop the gloves when he wants to. And I think that that's what's changed. I don't think it's so much that there's not a place for the 6'4", 220 guy that, you know, tries to get his shirt pulled off so that he can wrap it around your head and beat you up.
Right. I mean, you at least have to have some modicum of skill. And you have to have actually a good bit of it these days. Whereas, say, 20 years ago, even 20 years ago, you could sit there and in the right system, yeah, this guy fights, you know, has like 50, 60, 70 majors. No problem.
Yeah, I mean, Patrick Bortolo, I mean, that was our situation, that he was on the team only because he was big. He wasn't a good hockey player. I mean, I like the guy, but if we're being honest, he had no business being on the team for skill or anything like that. He was just there to let people know that if you headhunt Duchesne, he will find you. But even him, I mean, there wasn't a place for him anymore. We have guys who are tough, and now he plays in San Antonio. And I think that that's the case. I don't see any big enforcers in the league anymore. There's Lucic, but he can play hockey too, as much as I hate the guy.
Right. Yeah. It was like the old days, even like the Corey Perrys of the world are good examples. Dustin Byfuglien. Dustin Byfuglien, you don't want to fight simply because it's, well, Dustin Byfuglien. I mean,
he's enormous. God,
265 pounds.
That's why when you see these hits that he's known to be dirty for, I mean, he's just a big dude. You can't be a ginger little 265 pounder. You're going to touch people and they're going to fall down. It'll happen. He is maybe a little dirty at times, but not everything he does is as bad as it may not be. He's just a giant.
If you're 6'6", you're about 6'9" on skates. And the power and torque that he generates with his skating stride, and he hits somebody, 9 times out of 10, they're going to go flying in a direction that you wouldn't expect.
And it's going to hurt. I mean, it's not a small thing.
No. Not only is it going to hurt, you're going to feel it for a long while, and you're not going to like it.
And you'll definitely think twice about going down that side of the ice again.
Yeah, I mean, these players are bigger, stronger, and faster for a reason. They damn well better be, otherwise they're not going to survive in this league at all.
And they come in at 18 years old, ready to play hockey, too. It's amazing how that's changed. I mean, these guys, you know, they're trying to get exceptions for some guys to let them play like in the Olympics and things like that. I think Eichel was in this situation, not for that reason, but it's just fascinating to me that they're not just, I mean, physically they're ready, skills are ready, and they're mentally ready. It seems like McKinnon just walked in here and he was ready to take on the league. And so far he kind of has.
Yeah. The other thing too is now you'll notice, obviously in the last 5-10 years, the influx of smaller players that are a lot stronger than anybody thinks. Obviously one of the forerunners of that era was Marty St. Louis.
Yeah.
You've ever watched a Marty St. Louis workout or even had the fortune of seeing like videos on YouTube, et cetera, or wherever? The guy had legs. Fat where? Don't see it.
Yeah, no, they're trunks. There's no doubt about it. And you know, he's not a big guy, but his legs are
monstrous.
Amazing. I've seen it, and it's, you wouldn't expect it until you've seen the workout and you've seen the legs without the pads on it. Absolutely.
I mean, I got to meet him, you know, laughably, you know, and found somebody that has smaller hands than I do, which is amazing. sit there and shake his hand and still is like, crunch, really? Ow.
People say that about Sakic, too. I met Sakic a couple times, and my first thought, my inside voice was not as big as I thought he'd be. He's a small dude, really.
Small dude. Yeah, people just didn't realize it. A lot of these players are bigger than life on the ice. Off the ice, it's like, yeah, really? I could take him. Put him on the ice. Mommy.
Yep.
Like, run. I'd be the first one to admit it. I mean, some guy's skating at 24 miles per hour at me straight ahead. Now it's like, duck.
Yeah, no, I never had the right mindset. I always took the hits, and I pay for it now. Like you, I can't walk up the stairs without a click every time my ankle turns over, you know? Just click, click, click every step.
Yeah, people just, if you played the sport or if you played any sport long enough, unfortunately, when you start getting up in years, and you used to say like 45, 50. Now it's like 30, 35, 40, and you go, damn, really?
It's like, this hurts. Thing. It really
how
is.
I used to sit there. I lived in California for 4 years. I lived in Southern California. And I thought, oh, I'm going to finally escape that nagging knee pain I used to get before it rained. No, it was actually worse.
Yep.
I sat there. There was a couple cold snaps when it was dry outside. It would be like 20 degrees and it would feel like it was zero without wind, mind you. It was 20, it would feel like zero just because it's so dry outside. And the next day, you'd say you get like a little surge of moisture and some snow showers. And, oh, my knee, why is it hurting so much? And that's what it was. Pressure change combined with the moisture change. And it's just like, really? I didn't escape this at all. If anything, it's even worse. The only good thing about living out there is I learned how to play hockey in altitude, which was kind of cool.
It was
different. I lived 4,000 feet up, and up in Big Bear, which is about 7,500 feet up, they had a nice hockey rink.
Yeah, a lot of athletes train there because of the altitude.
Yeah, the altitude change is huge there. They'll either go to Mammoth Mountain, which is 10,000 feet up, or they'll go to Big Bear, which is a little more hidden, and people don't realize that it's about an hour away from Palm Springs. Party place. It's a light party place. And literally, you run into a few hockey players in the off season there. I ran into Tamu Solani a few times. Then I got the privilege of covering, Anaheim and LA, and meeting, people like Helene Elliott, Eric Stevens, so many good Southern California beat guys, Rich Hammond, et cetera. And I used to think, early days of Twitter, these people are real jerks. They're in California and they kind of act like it a little bit. Some of them, not all of them.
Right.
And the reality is they're far the furthest thing from it. One of the guys that I happened to meet was Eric Moncrief. Jesus, guy was 6'9".
That just seems like it wouldn't be healthy.
One tall dude. And sadly, wasn't healthy. He was just a big, larger than life, about 305-pound guy. And,
yeah, that's not good for the heart.
No, it's not. But I mean, he looked picture of health. He's the nicest of people. It happened that I knew him vaguely from being in New Jersey because he lived up in Montclair, which is about, it was about 45, 50 minutes from me. And, he taught me the ropes of what it's like to cover a locker room in Southern California. He's like, the first thing is, it's okay to wear shades in the locker room.
Okay.
People, it's a casual atmosphere. You don't even always have to wear a suit and tie. He's like, it gets hot here sometimes, even in October and Santa Ana's kicking. I'm like, okay, I'll take your word for it. You'd see a few people even in, you'd see some of the ladies in flip-flops even. Heidi Angel, for example, is the classic. One day she came in completely in summer attire in the middle of October. So, but sadly, I found out he had passed away. And the first thing I thought, it's like, my God, here's this guy. He's been at this for 8-9 years. And he's just teaching this schmuck from New Jersey the ropes like it's nothing. And it honestly was a game changer for me. It was humbling for me as well. Because I never thought, I should, not necessarily be nicer to my fellow man or woman. But damn it, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't be so arrogant about this. This really is a privilege.
There's a handful of people who I hope are listening to this because there's some guys getting some success in my world and around this league with the media that I think they need that. You have to have perspective. And it sounds like you have it. You're a lucky guy, actually, to know the people you've known and talk to the people you have in the way you have. And I think
incredible.
That's what the value is. I mean, it's really cool that you can even do that. So it seems like you're aware of that. And I think some people just aren't. They get to one level and it's not good enough. They need the next and they don't stop to enjoy what's right in front of them.
It never hurts to enjoy what you're doing. If you can find a job that you love more than 80% of the time, I won't say 100% because there's times where I look at tomorrow and I look at Thursday night and what I have to do. It's like crap. You know, I'm lucky enough to be able to balance my professional life with my personal life in a very constructive way. I know that, for example, my niece, I have to babysit my niece. Does it get in the way sometimes with what I have to do professionally? Sure. But would I be lying if I said I didn't try to find a way to sneak certain things in? Sure. Yeah, I do. It just happens. Have I done radio interviews before while, you know, in other locations that I probably shouldn't be doing them in? Yeah, sure. But it's fun. It's like the challenge of, oh, okay, is this going to, you know, backfire horribly? Might not. But at the same time, I know that I will probably have to be up until 4 or 5 a.m. Eastern time Friday morning, trying to get articles out on deadline and trying to come up with cheat sheets for daily fantasy. I know that's what I have to do. And yet I wouldn't have it any other way.
Like you said, if you won the lottery, $10 million, you'd still do it, right?
I would be still in this. I wouldn't be off on some island somewhere. I'd probably still be living in New Jersey to be truthful. Like I gotta do this. I mean, it's part of life. It's not just a job. It's not just a hobby anymore. It's part of life. It's part of what I enjoy doing. And you're never going to be successful in this business if you don't have three things. One, humility. Two, love of what you're doing. And three, and most importantly, God damn it, you have to have some support somewhere. You really do. No matter how good or bad it gets, you have to have people that you can absolutely go back to and say, hey, you know what? Today was an awesome day, or today was just incredibly the worst day I could have ever experienced. And it's even better if you don't always get what you want to hear. You get sometimes what you don't want to hear. Sort of the reality check. And you have to have the first two things, but if you don't have the third with it, it's just not the same.
I agree. And you sound like you have that for sure. That's probably something I need to work on, but I think you're absolutely right.
Hey, it's we're all still working on it. We're still working on it. I mean, it never goes away. There's always times where you have moments where you make some kind of mistake somewhere and you go, oh, that's not true. Oh, damn.
I'm just owning them anymore. Even if I tweet out where I use the wrong word and it makes me look like an idiot, I've decided just to own it. That's just, it's out there. It's what it is. Nobody remembers the tweet 5 minutes from now anyways. Whatever.
No, they don't. No, they don't.
Although a handful of them do find a point of, you know, making sure that I know what I did. And that's fine too. I'm totally fine with it.
Hey, you know, you roll with it, you learn from it, and you go on from it.
So you've been fascinating. You really are, actually. You're way better than I thought you'd be, to tell you the truth. I've learned a lot from you, not even just with the hockey and the fantasy sports and all that, but you have a wealth of experience in this industry and just kind of in living life right, I think. So thank you so much for doing this. But I can't let you off the hook without getting at least 3 to 5 guys from the Avalanche who you would put on your fantasy team if you had to.
Absolutely. Oh, if I absolutely have to, I'm taking Calvin Bécard first, oddly enough. I still believe 1, 2, 5 years down the road, somewhere at some point, somebody in the Avalanche organization, not named Patrick Waugh, figures out that this guy might be a starter. it's a gut feeling. It's a hunch, but I just kind of know it's there. I'm absolutely taking Nathan MacKinnon. There's no other way around it. My third guy obviously would be Matthew Shane. I've always been attached to Matthew Shane one way or the other. I've had friends of mine that have talk you know, a lot of good things about him. And fourth guy would be Tyson Barrie. I like the way Tyson Barrie plays the game. He still has to improve on some things, obviously. We all do. But his overall upside just suggest that if he didn't have to feel like he was Bugs Bunny playing against the Gas House Gorillas, he'd be much better off as a defenseman. It's just kind of how it is, unfortunately. And the fifth guy from the Az, which is going to sound funny, but for some reason, it's the most obvious. And it should have been the most obvious from the beginning, is Jerome McGinley. And it's not just what he does on the ice. It's what he does off the ice as well. There's just something about having a guy like that in the locker room. And it carries to his fantasy hockey game as well. Just that, you know, attitude. It's kind of like what Tamu Solani had in his last few years in Anaheim. You know, you knew you were going to get some kind of production from him. And it's the same with Jaromir Jagr, and he's still producing at 446 years old.
Right.
43. But you get the idea. You know, those players like that, that can still produce in what is considered a not-so-prime age, well, let's face it, well below prime, you have to admire. And you have to admire how they carry themselves. And they all do it in different ways. That's kind of the fascination with them.
And everybody's looking to count them out every chance they get, and they just keep producing.
Oh, always. Always. Oh, you see it even when Jaromir Jagr had that brief injury. I saw the article the next day, and I'm thinking to myself, this is coming from a Panthers beat writer, mind you, and I know him. But who put the, and then you read the article and realize it's not even about that. It's somebody from the Miami Herald who put a clickbait headline up there, and you just go, damn. Like, this article is nothing about this at all. And, you know, the guy's like, yeah, I saw that, you know. And then the next day, the headline is magically changed. And so is the title. So it just happens sometimes, and sometimes it goes the other way, obviously, where, yeah, some people are just looking to take a hatchet job at certain players, and that's it. I'll admit it. I've done it.
It's a reality of social media, right? Yeah, everybody has the clickbait, and I click on it too, so that's why they keep doing it, I'm sure, right? But they get me every now and then. I hear you, yeah?
There's a few, definitely. I mean, you sit there and read a title and go, I've just got to read this thing. And then you go and read it and go, oh, there's a minute and 40 seconds I'm never getting back.
Yep. Put that in the well of lost dreams.
Ah, damn it.
All right, we're going to wrap this up. You have been amazing, awesome, and really cool for doing this for me. I kind of feel like you paid it forward a little bit for the guys that showed you the ropes and that you took the time to talk to me. So I really appreciate it, really appreciate you, and I need you to do it again with me at some point. That's my only ask of you.
I don't have a problem with it at all. Like I said, I'm accessible to all people. I don't care. It's more, for me, it's not only just a lesson learned, but it's fun to pay it forward. And you should. I mean, there were people that came before me. There are people that will come after me. And they'll go, well, how the heck do you do this? And it's really, it's not duty. It's something that should be just expected out of people in the press. Hey, you know, I'm coming up. I want to join this, you know, the Professional Hockey Writers Association, et cetera, or where Fantasy Sports Writers Association, et cetera. There are always more people I've noticed in the sport of hockey, as far as media, that are willing to take people under their wing more so than in other sports. And I'm forever grateful for it.
I think you're doing a good job being a mentor for other people on it too. So kudos to you. And that's Chris Wassell. We cut it off there because it's just pretty much bro knuckles and appreciation for each other. And you don't need to hear all that. You've already been at this for a good 40 minutes. So thank you for listening. And I hope that you appreciate these the way that I do. I know from some of your comments that you do like this long form and you do like getting to know the people who are in this sort of underbelly of hockey. We think it's cool and we dig you digging it. So this show is brought to you by AvsFam, as always, and we always talk about the hoodies this time of year because it's cold and hoodies are awesome. They're like wearing a down comforter, but out in the world where you don't get heckled for doing it. And the Dutchie hoodies, the EJ hoodies, all the hoodies, really, they're that awesome. They're 1,000 warm hugs on your body, ready for you to do whatever you want to do. Go check them out. Do yourself a favor and get one. And if you think that there's somebody out there who needs one, get them one too, because that's awesome.
but you should definitely wait it out. If you watch the games and you're on Twitter, you know what happens after every game? Whoever scored a goal, it's 10% off per goal. Dutchy gets a goal, 10% off. EJ gets two goals, that's 20% off his gear. So you can save a little bit of money that way too. And if you want to play a game, then play the game. It's a little bit like gambling and fantasy hockey. www.avspam.com. Stay awesome.